You mentioned the cameos there. At what stage did they sort of occur? Were they in your script, or did it was it the case that the director had to kind of fit them into the script once people were became available?
It's all of those,
Ah.
and everything in between. I would write cameo roles, usually not knowing who would fill them, but I would write roles knowing that some celebrity cameo would fill this role.
Right.
And I would have to create a bunch of them, and as the movies went on, I had to create more and more. There are only a few in Sharknado 2. And there are more in 3 and more in 4. So I would write some parts specifically for that. And then sometimes we would find out, a couple of days ahead of time, hey, we got this celebrity. Can you write something for them specifically? So the Kathie Lee Gifford stuff in Sharknado was sort of put together at the last minute.
Right.
The Matt Lauer and Al Roker stuff, I actually wrote for them from the beginning, but then we didn't know if we were going to be able to get them. So alternate versions were written that would be just sort of generic news people.
Right.
And then when we did finally get them, it was after we'd finished shooting the rest of the film, actually. And Anthony went back to New York to shoot that stuff on their stage. And basically, he took all the different drafts of everything I'd written, and he sort of merged them all together and picked the best pieces. And then he had them ad lib some stuff. And the cameo of Richard, oh God, I can never remember his last name. The guy from Mad About You and Spin City, who played the retired baseball player who has a cameo at the baseball stadium.
Kind, Richard Kind.
Right, Richard Kind.
Of course, yes.
That was done at the last minute. We found out the night before. Anthony got a call in his hotel room the night before we were going to shoot that scene around midnight. We'd gotten him. But we had to shoot him tomorrow, and we had to come up with a part for him. And he called me at midnight, and I've had lifelong insomnia. And
Ah.
a few years before Sharknado, I had discovered Ambien. My doctor had prescribed Ambien for me to help me sleep.
Right.
And so Anthony calls me about 5 minutes after I've taken my Ambien. And so I know I'm going to be unconscious in about 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
Said, you were 5 minutes late, Anthony. I can't even, I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm going to be asleep in 15 minutes. And of course, Anthony had too much on his plate. He was just trying to prepare for the next shooting day. So he called a friend of his who's also a writer. And I don't even know the guy's name, to be honest with you. But in the span of a few hours, he came up with that cameo for Richard Kind as the ex-baseball player.
Right.
And the next morning they shot it. And it was wonderful. I mean, Anthony handed it to me that morning when I got on set, and he said, "Let me know if there's anything you want to change on this." And I looked over it, and I think I changed a word or two that just didn't feel quite like it fit in. But otherwise, it's basically what his friend wrote, at 2 in the morning the night before. So it was a whole variety of things. In Sharknado 3, we actually found out in advance that Penn and Teller were going to play
Right.
David Hasselhoff's astronaut friends. And so I actually got to write that scene for Penn and Teller. And it was a lot of fun for me because they were comedians. And so
Sure.
I figured, okay, I'll finally get to tell a joke. Because even
Right.
though the Sharknado movies are very funny, there are no actual jokes in it.
Right.
So I had this great joke. I thought, to this day, I think it's hilarious. Where one of his astronaut buddies is telling a joke about Neil Armstrong. And it's like, God, now I can't even remember it. It's like, he goes in. So you know, Neil, he could be very serious. You remember how Neil was. And he says, well, sure, Buzz, but it'll still look good on your resume. And to me, this is hilarious. Telling Buzz Armstrong being the second man on the moon will still look good on his resume.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it ever got the response, the audience response that I had hoped for. But it was the first time I'd actually written an actual joke in a Sharknado movie. So I had fun with that. So it's the whole span of sometimes we know who it's going to be. Sometimes we just know some celebrity will play this part, and sometimes it's a thing invented at the last minute. And in fact, on number three, we had one day where I was on set, and they sent us two celebrities for the same role, and both there on set waiting to shoot. And so Anthony comes to me and he says, "Thunder, I've got two people to play one part. What do I?" So I was we were out sort of in the wilderness, and I didn't have a computer, I didn't have a desk, I didn't have anything, and so I had my dog with me because he was doing a cameo in the film as a military dog. So I call him over and I tell him to stay, and I start writing on the back of one of the scripts. I set the script down on my dog's back and I start writing, you know, out by hand. I basically take this one part and turn it into two parts. I'm writing dialogue, and I'm handing Anthony these handwritten pages to give to the actors. So that's probably the most extreme situation of a last minute cameo. it was every conceivable way it could happen.
Fantastic. You mentioned their sort of audience response. Have you ever actually gotten a chance to see any of the Sharknado movies with an audience?
Yeah, all but the first one, actually.
Oh, cool.
No, wait, I take that back. All of them, yeah. Because, I mean, the first movie, when it premiered, nobody knew what it was going to become. So I was just sitting at home, you know, and I thought I was going to be participating in a live tweet. You know, we'd done one for American Warships, and there were like maybe 100 people tweeting, and, you know, a few of them were asking intelligent questions, and most of them were just saying how bad we were and how stupid. Sure. And so that's what I was expecting for Sharknado. And then, of course, it blew up into this whole thing. But then, because it had become such a phenomenon, like a month later, there was this one night only midnight movie theatrical release of it, and so we all went to that, and it was this whole red carpet thing, and there was a press line, and there was a big party, and Tara Reid showed up with Entertainment Tonight following her around, and so actually at the theater in downtown LA where it was showing, they sold out, and they added a second and then a third auditorium.
Wow.
So that was an incredible moment. So I saw it with them, with that audience. And then I saw it again just a few years ago, at the Field Museum in Chicago. Their shark expert did a screening of Sharknado and then a presentation afterwards, about the scientific realities behind it, sort of. And I found out about this and contacted them, and they said, sure, we'd love to have you come out. So they flew me out to Chicago, and I did a Q&A with their shark expert after the movie. But I hadn't seen it in quite a few years. And seeing it with an audience, you know, they were laughing through the whole thing, and it was great. And I'd forgotten just how funny it was.
Oh, that's gotta be the best.
Yeah, that was great fun. And then all the others, of course, we had actual premiere screenings. You know, we would do a red carpet thing. And then we would live tweet in the theater. So me and Anthony would both have our laptops open in the movie theater, probably pissing off the people behind us. But it was part of the whole thing. So I think people understood what they were getting into. Yeah, so all the others I saw with live audiences there when they premiered.
Excellent. I guess that brings me to one of my final questions, which is, why is it you feel that these movies did take off like they did and was such a big hit for yourself and for The Asylum compared to their previous works and your previous works?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a theory about that.
Okay.
My feeling has always been that it was the first of these sci-fi channel movies with the crazy mashup titles that actually delivered the sense of fun title implied.
Yeah.
I mean, sci-fi had done a bunch of these movies. You know, there was Mansquito, and there was, I don't know, Dino Croc, and, you know, a bunch of others where they just had mashup titles. But they were always one of two things. Either they took themselves deadly serious, or they were over the top, winking at the camera, intentionally campy.
Right.
And what I tried to do with Sharknado was the same thing, actually, that I had done with my first film, Mutant Vampire Zombies from the Hood, is I tried to walk a very fine line between those two things. I wanted the audience to be wondering, is this serious? Do they know how he did this? Wait, do they know? I think they know. And then to sort of realize that we were in on the joke, so they could be in on the joke in both ways. You know, both looking at it and saying, this is ridiculous, and thinking, well, isn't this hilarious that they know how ridiculous this is?
Right.
And so I think just that sense of fun, of non-cynical fun, is what made it work. And you know, of course, the title is great.
Yeah.
And the marketing campaign, the first poster, I had been concerned that people, not that the audience wouldn't get it, but that sci-fi and The Asylum wouldn't get it.
Right.
And when I saw the first poster, the film hadn't even been shot when the first poster was released. But the script had been written. So I spent a few months worrying that this was either going to be taken too seriously or it was going to be played too much for laughs.
Right.
And when I saw the first poster and the tagline was, enough said,
right,
I realized that everybody got it. And it was going to be okay. And so from that point on, I sort of relaxed about it. And I mean, it was a weird summer for movies. There were a lot of big budget bombs that summer.
Right.
Pre-manufactured things that audiences were being told, you have to like this. This has to be the big summer movie.
Right.
Lone Ranger being the most obvious one.
Oh, right. This was 2013, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think audiences were in the mood to discover something for themselves.
Sure.
And so they sort of found us and made us their own. And you know, we're in a lifetime's worth of debt to those early Sharknado fans, because without them, there never would have been sequels. There never would have been a pop culture phenomenon. I am very much in debt to the Sharknado fans. But I think it was sort of a perfect storm of an audience appetite for something they could discover for themselves and have fun with, and a movie that finally delivered on the sense of fun that its title promised.
Excellent. Fantastic. So what's next for you? You've mentioned that you seem to enjoy writing more than directing, but is directing something you'd consider in the future?
I can't believe I convey that perception, because it's exactly the opposite.
Oh, right.
I
Okay.
have always thought of myself as a director first, and
Ah.
writer only by necessity.
Ah.
No, I love directing. It's a lot harder. It's a lot more stressful.
Right, yeah.
But it's also a lot more fulfilling for me. So yeah, I always saw myself as a director. I can remember for years telling people that I could win an Academy Award for best screenplay, and I'd still feel like a failure if I wasn't directing.
Right.
So yeah, directing is very much on my mind, and I will write. I will just write, you know, for hire. But my main thrust now is directing films that I've written. So right now I'm developing two feature projects. One is sort of Sharknado-esque. It's called Deadbeard, the zombie pirate rock musical. And it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a zombie pirate rock musical. And so we're trying to put financing together for that. That's a smaller budget film, but I want to try and get Bruce Campbell to play the title character of Deadbeard.
Wonderful. Fantastic.
And then the other thing I'm developing is a very serious, dark science fiction thriller called Starchild, which is kind of, how would I describe it? It's kind of Panic Room meets Die Hard in space.
Wow.
And it's a very intense kind of descent into hell kind of story. And I'm talking to several producers about that right now. The script for both of them is finished. Deadbeard, we're still getting the songs written, but the actual script for both of them is finished, and I'm sort of simultaneously trying to get both of those financed. And I've also got some TV projects and a comic book that I want to write to then turn into a TV series. So there's a lot of stuff going on, but those are the two main things right now.
Fantastic. Well, that all sounds great, and I can't wait to see it.
Me too.